As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is a Monday. There are but two games left in the college football season. One is a Texas Bowl between LSU and Kansas State, and apparently there was a rodeo event that usually determines the winner. So congratulations to LSU, I guess. And then there's the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia, the product of two extremely boring semifinals that hopefully will create an exciting final. It was pretty exciting the last time they played for the national championship, but we'll see. But right now, we got to get into some takes. And I realize when you are listening to sports talk, when your audio version of sports talk, you're usually expecting some molten takes. Well, we're not going to do that. I brought on Max Olson because he and I are terrible at hot takes. We are great at room temperature takes. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a day of room temperature takes. You have had an entire weekend of scorching takes. You've had the folks on ESPN, Dan Wolkin at USA Today, who never met a take he couldn't heat up, Dennis Dodd, all of these people blasting you from the take furnace. Well, we're here to bring the thermostat down a little bit. We're going to talk about these things, but we're not going
to. We are not here to get ratioed today.
Ian. No.
That's what we're not here
to. No, we are not. We may get a little spicy, but if we do, the other one probably needs to start yelling at the other one to stop, slow down, hold up. What do you think? You're on WFAN? Yeah, we're not doing that.
I was thinking about this, like, you tell me how you feel about it. I was thinking about this, how I feel about reporting, but maybe also about opinion making. I know, Andy, you get a lot of satisfaction in being right about stuff, and I know that because I follow you on Twitter, but the thing that I get the most satisfaction out of is just being not wrong. I just like when you're reporting stuff, I just want to be
I
not
love being
wrong.
Not wrong,
like, when
too.
The Big 12 stuff was all going crazy and we were breaking all that news. The main thing, like, everyone wants to be first, I just wanted to be not wrong on the stuff that I put out there.
Oh, I think that's a great quality, and I'm with you. I'd rather be not wrong than first, because first, sometimes you're wrong. First and right is obviously the best state of being, but not wrong, because I feel like if you it's different between reporting and opinion making. In reporting, if you're wrong, I feel like you've lost your credibility.
Your credibility.
And
100%.
So you try not to be wrong. You do everything within your power to make sure you have, you know, vetted everything, that you have the correct information, that you've double-checked, triple-checked. Opinion making is a little bit different. Sometimes it's just guessing at the
outcome. It's all disposable with opinion making.
Exactly.
That's right. It's all disposable. And there's no scoreboard on, man, we can't trust that guy because, I guess there's, like, you know, some big ones, I suppose. But, I mean, overall, yeah, it's there's not a whole lot of accountability.
Yeah, we'll come back every once in a while and hit you with the one out of 50,000 times that we got it right. I will tell you that when we got it wrong. Like, Ari and I put that video out immediately after Alabama beat Georgia in the SEC championship game because we were so wrong. We were so hilariously wrong that you have to acknowledge that. Like, I hate it more when people double down. Like, there was the video of the N'Kobe Dean play from the Orange Bowl where he starts off at the numbers and runs to the opposite numbers and gets a TFL on a receiver that he was shadowing. And I posted I retweeted like the All 22 clip. And some guy's like, what? It's a DB following a player. What is the big deal about that? I'm like, first of all, it's a 230-pound linebacker. And second of all, you don't even understand what you just watched if you don't think that's amazing. I'm sorry. And this guy just kept doubling down and doubling down. He's like, you're just hyping
it. Like, maybe we just like, maybe in the scouting world, we just use that term like sideline to sideline too generously.
Yes.
I mean, that literal sideline to sideline, yes. There's extremely few people who can do it. An All-American guy who's the best linebacker in the country can sometimes do it.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, if you're wrong, admit you're... And listen, I'm here to tell you, admitting you're wrong is great content. It's great for the show. Like, I don't eat mayonnaise unless I'm willing to admit
I'm wrong.
It's
also how you stay
wrong.
Married, too, man. You know?
Oh,
you have
yeah.
to learn to, you best have to way. Just learn to admit, oh, my bad. You have to.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's start off with the clip that had everyone talking all weekend. And as we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, the late NFL games have already started and people are still talking about this, which I'm so shocked that it's such a big deal that anybody cares. But apparently every word that Kirk Herbstreit utters, everybody cares about deeply. I didn't realize I don't care that deeply about what he says, but apparently a lot of people do. So Let's hear Kirk Herbstreit on Saturday morning, the thing that caused the kerfuffle.
Money, the amount of money, like what's the difference as a player in saying these games are meaningless when, Des, we played in quote-unquote meaningless games. I mean, I know you guys were right here a lot, but I just don't understand. If you don't make it to the playoff, how is it meaningless to yeah. play football and compete? Isn't that what we do as right. football players? We compete. So yeah. I don't know if changing and expanding it yeah. is going to change anything. I really don't. I think this era of player just doesn't love football.
That's what I was about to say. We're dealing with a total different mentality when we're dealing with these student athletes nowadays, especially the football players. I mean, their whole mentality right now is about the championship, the playoff. We got to get into the CFB or the CFP. And because of that, they don't value the bowl games. Now, when we were coming up, Herbstreit, myself, like to go to a bowl game was a huge reward for a fantastic season. That's what it meant. It's like, okay, your team played this well, so you're going to be rewarded by going to this bowl game. You're going to get a ring. You're going to get swag. Now, kids don't really care about that. They have a sense of entitlement, and it's like if we're not going to the one that matters, then you know it just doesn't have as much value to them as it did us growing up.
Get off my lawn! That's all I heard. That's all. All right, let's break this down, Max.
Did you ever read? There was once a website back in the kind of early days of blogging stuff. Fire Joe Morgan.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know what that is?
Oh yeah, and if you FJM,
where they would take a terrible baseball column and they would just go line by line yeah. and destroy it.
It's the creator
video,
of the-
you could probably. Yeah, Ken Tremendous. That's
yeah,
right.
The head writer Mike of The Scher. Office and the showrunner for Parks and Recreation. And what they would do, yes, they would. It was called FJMing a story, and they would
yeah.
point by point just take it apart. And we can do that too. We'll start with what Kirk
you could.
Said.
Easy. Well, I mean, it's kind of sentence by sentence.
Yeah.
You could if you wanted to.
We'll start with what Kirk said. When we played Dez, going to a bowl game was a big deal. How do you determine if it's meaningless if it's not in the playoff? Well, here's the thing. And remember, the genesis of this conversation is Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson sitting out the Rose Bowl. That is the genesis of this conversation. When Kirk and Desmond played at Ohio State and Michigan, respectively, the very best you could do in a given season was make it to the Rose Bowl. That was the best thing. So if you went into the season thinking you had the best team in the Big Ten, and you made it to the Rose Bowl, that was the absolute zenith. If you didn't make it to the Rose Bowl and you thought you had the best team in the Big Ten, you were disappointed. If you didn't make it to the Rose Bowl, but you thought, okay, maybe that other team was kind of better, then you were pretty cool with going to the Citrus Bowl. Like, it's not the best thing you can get anymore. It's not.
Right. Well, and I want to give I thought one take I saw on this yesterday. I want to give him credit. Matt Prem, who covers Oregon, he made a point when Herb Street was playing in bowl games in 93, there's 18 bowl games.
Correct.
So that was special. Mm-hmm. That was special to go to one of the 18 bowl games.
Yep.
Now, what changed since then, Andy? His employer decided there should be 40 bowl
games. Well, and while we're on that topic, because you're right, it is their employer who decided there would be more bowl games because for reasons that we
it's
enumerated.
It's good inventory. Why not?
Yeah, on the show last week. Like, it's good for business. Like, the Boca Raton Bowl gets the same rating as an NBA on TNT broadcast that probably costs four times as much to buy the rights to. So
totally.
Like, there is no question.
This year, we just invented a bowl game because you can, because it's that easy.
Yes, we're going to do it next year, the Ass Bowl. It's going to be amazing. And so, not only that, though, Max, who is most responsible for making it all about the playoff? Who tilts its coverage all the way to the playoff? Which, again, not a terrible business decision because they have paid significant money for the rights to broadcast the playoff. But whose fault is that? Would that be the company that employs Kirk Herbstreit and Desmond Howard?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I want to just say it as a disclaimer because I used to work there. Like, I a lot of time, it's easy to just sort of like, you know, blame the four letters. And like, it's easy for people on Twitter to be like, oh, that statement by Herbstreit or Howard represents the views of everyone at ESPN.
Certainly not. It doesn't.
Certainly
we know
not,
that.
Right? The college people that cover college football don't feel that way.
It probably doesn't represent the views of ESPN management because ESPN management has told those guys, you're pushing the playoff. And they're pushing the playoff right. Because we see the ads they run. Like, we know what they're pushing. We understand
we hear the playoff priorities talk during the bowl games.
Yeah. So
yes.
If you want to blame
I just want to say, like,
yeah.
How have we got to this point where there's only like 10 programs that matter in this sport? It would be Kirk Herbstreit's employer has a large role in that.
Yes. So if you want to blame someone,
and thus the only the playoff matters, and thus if you didn't make the playoff, your season wasn't good, which is how Ohio State fans feel right now.
That and how Ohio State players
good enough,
feel
is not worth celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the same time, like Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to make money in the NFL someday.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to play in this game, but he did. It's just the guys that are going to the draft that didn't play.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I will throw another room temperature take in on this. I don't think most of the players that opt out are making a good economic decision by opting out.
Elaborate.
There are only 32 first round spots. Certain players we know are going to be first rounders. Aiden Hutchinson, Jordan Davis, Kayvon Thibodeau. Like, we know they're going to be first round draft picks unless there is some sort of skeleton in the closet off the field that we don't know about. But they are going to be first rounders if everything goes according to chalk between now and April.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only 32 of those spots. You can be reasonably assured that three or four of them are going to be guys we've not really talked about much that are playing at smaller schools that didn't opt out of bowl games because they either didn't, their team didn't make a bowl or they're playing in the FCS and they played in the playoff. So we're not talking about that many people who are in line for those spots. Pretty much everybody else can make themselves money by playing in the bowl because the way those NFL, like the NFL team sends scouts to games throughout the college season. They send scouts to practices throughout the year. Sure. The scouting department's always watching these guys, but the decision makers, the GMs, the coaches, the owners, a lot of them aren't paying much attention until the end of the season. So what you miss by opting out of a game that everybody's going to be watching, and with most of these bowl games, I mean, I'm looking at the ratings. Everybody who cares about football is watching them. What you miss by opting out is the possibility that Jerry Jones is sitting in his hotel room with a whiskey before a road game and going, ooh, I like that guy. I want that guy. And you get drafted a round before you probably should. Like, that's there's real money in that. And so that's the thing. And I realize we're going to transition into Matt Corral, but I realize people think, oh, they're taking an inordinate risk, but not really. Like, you're going to play football again eventually. You're going to have to risk stepping on a football field. Now, I understand there's a big difference between doing it in the NFL and doing it in college and having the security of being drafted. But if you're going to be a fourth-round pick, you don't have that much security anyway. Like, you could get cut in
preseason. Right, so you're saying that we've gone a little too far in the other direction where it's only protecting the downside, and now maybe we're not appreciating if there is upside in improving your situation through
There is absolutely upside in balling out in a game that everybody's watching. Now, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, he's not draft eligible yet. Had that huge game. Now, the critical eye will say he was burning a second-string running back who had to play corner. And maybe he wouldn't gain that many yards. But if you watched him all season, he's really good.
Right.
And like Marvin Harrison Jr.
still was their leading receiver this year.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be really, really good. Like there's – you take the other part away. They're really good. But what if that was Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave? Is either one of those guys a guaranteed first-rounder right now? We're going to have Dane Brugler on the show, by the way, on Wednesday. He can tell. He can give us a little more insight into that.
Ask Dane that. Ask Dane, can those guys move up five spots by playing in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or are they is the totality of the tape kind of the bigger thing and one extra game there doesn't
Yeah,
really
I mean like
change
especially
much
Olave, that's 4 years worth of tape. So it's pretty hard.
Right.
But again,
I think he would also tell you Ohio State's tackle coming off a not very good game against Michigan probably could have used a Rose Bowl to respond to that and put something better on tape.
Nicholas Petit Frere, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That the bowl games now are just being looked at as a potential downside. And look, I get why. And this is another thing that Kirk and Desmond failed to acknowledge. I'm trying to think, what was the highest coaching salary in 2013? Was it $6 million?
I mean, in 13, we're probably heading in the $5 million range, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was $5.5 million, Nick Saban.
Okay, yeah.
It's doubled since the playoffs started. Doubled.
That's just inflation, really. I mean, you think about it.
Okay. So here's the other thing. I think they're also blaming these opt-outs on the wrong thing. They're saying it's because of the playoff that they're opting out. And if you go back to the BCS, they wouldn't opt out of, say, the Fiesta Bowl or the Rose Bowl if they weren't in the BCS championship. I argue they would. I argue anybody who didn't make the BCS championship game, if that were still the system, would be opting out now. But it's not because the players look at the playoff and say, if I'm not in the playoff, it doesn't matter. It's that they look at it and say, if I'm not playing for a national championship, it doesn't matter. And I see all of you getting rich off of this. Like, they're not stupid. Mm-hmm. They know that there's $80 million in rights fees for the Rose Bowl. It costs $80 million to televise to televise the Rose Bowl. $80 million. Right. So, of course, I'm going to hold out till I get a little bit bigger cut of that.
Sure, and it's not like these guys are just going on the advice of their agents, are they not?
Yes, and like I said, it's partially bad advice unless you're a surefire first rounder. Because if you're a surefire first rounder, you probably you should not play in a bowl game unless you're playing for the national title. Like you shouldn't. But
Right.
That again,
because it's their asset they're trying to protect.
And that's not 32 people, by the way. They're not 32 surefire first rounders. It might be 20. Everybody else should play because you can make yourself some money. But let's talk about Matt Corral, who did play. And I don't have a problem with him playing. You know, Matt Corral might be a first-round draft pick. Very good chance he is. I don't have a problem with him playing. I think he made very clear how he felt about his teammates, what he wanted to do, and he got hurt, which is an inherent risk, and he knew it. I go back to that story that we had. Was it Austin Meek, I believe, talked to Jake Butt. And Jake Butt tore up his knee in the Orange Bowl. It never really got right. Probably affected his entire football career. Well, he says he doesn't regret playing in the game for a second. I'm guessing years from now, Matt Corral will tell you the same thing.
Yeah. Now, I agree. And my thing with when the Corral stuff happens is like, again, like lukewarm take here. I get a little tired of when, like, when we kind of skip past the empathy for the player and just go right to like using them as the chess piece for the argument you want to make on Twitter or in your
column.
Yeah,
we're gonna prop him up now.
Like last year when Dak broke his leg, you saw like all these people immediately be like, "Oh my God, he lost so much money on this," and that just pisses me off.
And when spoiler alert, go he right didn't. To that.
And he did it. And of course he did it. And Matt Corral probably won't either. I kind of, my lukewarm take on that is when that happens, like, maybe can we just like hope he's okay and kind of leave it at that and not really go down this road of, well, see, this proves the point I've been trying to make for years. But I also think the reason why the Herb Street stuff has probably resonated for the whole weekend so far is this argument about, well, these today's kids just don't love football. And I think that's the part that bothers people. And honestly, I think it bothers me too, like that argument. I just don't. Do you think that that's just a generational thing that we're just going to, people will just kind of say, like the entitlement thing?
Every generation thinks
you're always going to have the previous generation.
Yeah. Right. Every generation thinks the younger generation is a bunch of lazy, entitled slobs. Like, right. I am sure the parents.
And that's in all,
I'm
literally
sure the,
all sports.
The parents
too,
of the greatest generation,
football.
Like when they were, when it was the 30s. And the kids that were born in 1920 who wound up serving in World War II and saving the world. Like, I bet in 1930 there were a bunch of parents going, bunch of lazy slackers, these kids. They'll never amount to anything.
That's right.
All they did was save
the world.
They're
not grateful for any of this.
Yeah. I think that's just human nature. Every generation thinks the one before it is a bunch of old farts who don't know anything, and the one below it is a bunch of entitled, you know, lazy slobs. And I argue that there are people in every generation who are entitled and who don't want to work. And then there are people in every generation who are incredibly hard workers with incredible drive and very smart and you know, willing to sacrifice. And I don't think it's unique to any generation. And I don't think there's any more in one than another. I just think it manifests itself in different ways because generations grow up under different circumstances.
I agree with you, and I think the argument about, oh, this like generation is, you know, so entitled and stuff, like, it's not like we're heading towards a future of like less technology and fewer distractions, right? Right. Like, it's not like this is gonna get better.
It,
you know, we're not gonna go. It's not cyclical. It doesn't go back. So I think that like you hear that from coaches too, and to me sometimes when I hear that it's just like, okay, well, I tend to believe like you recruit your problems. So if you feel like there's a ton of these players out there that just look at their phones all the time and don't care enough about football and you can't trust them and stuff, then go recruit the kids that aren't that way.
Yeah, I don't think Nick Saban's recruiting many of those guys. It sure doesn't seem like he is. It sure seems like those guys listen and do what they're told.
Maybe he has just a manageable number of them. You know, I don't know. Wipes that out.
What I think has happened is Alabama has been so successful, they've created a self-selecting sample of recruit. Like the guy who wants to be coddled doesn't go to Alabama because he knows he won't get it there. And the guy who, because believe it or not, there are guys who know when they're as high school players, they know how they're coached best. Like they understand themselves well, and there are a lot who don't, but there are quite a few who already understand what helps them get the most out of them. And some people need to be yelled at, some people need to be reassured, some people need to be told why. I will say, from talking to coaches, that one thing that has become more and more important as the years have gone on is the ability to explain why. You can't just say because I said so. And I'm learning that as a parent, because you can get away with because I said so up until about age 7 or 8. And then you better have a damn good reason. And if you don't, maybe you need to examine why you said so.
Right. And I think we've talked about this before, but I think that we are, past couple of years, I think there's been enough incidents to suggest that the dictator style isn't going to be quite as effective with where the sport's going.
No, the power dynamic
and
so
even
much.
Though these coaches still have an outsized amount of power, and players rarely do come forward and say, "Here's what we went through here," or "Here's the things that they did that bother me." The players have the power imbalance leads to a lot of silence still. But we've had enough incidents with certain coaches making big mistakes that I think would suggest that if you think that the way these things should be run is just kind of the cracking the whip style, I don't know how well that works anymore.
Well, your whole team's going to leave, and then you're not going to be able to get much out of the portal, and you're going to suck. That's what's going to happen. So, you have to be aware of that and prepared for that. I mean, look at it's a smaller story, but look at what's going on in Hawaii. You know, Todd Graham has lost a lot of players into the portal. Who would have thought that when players could just leave that the notoriously unlikable guy would lose a bunch of players? Like,
would be unlikable enough that someone would want to leave Hawaii.
Yes. That,
I mean, that's a pretty high bar in terms of your college experience.
Yes. So unlikable that he's making people want to go to not Hawaii from Hawaii. Wow.
That's hard to fathom. And then, you know, like their best defensive player, he just committed to UCLA. There's a defensive lineman from there that is picking up a ton of Power 5 offers, including from Georgia. A defensive lineman in the portal getting offered from Georgia. Probably a pretty good player.
Yeah.
Their wideouts getting Power 5 offers. Like, this is – there's kind of a larger conversation there. But, I mean, yeah, if you're not doing it right, guess what? Your best players will leave.
Yeah. And so – I don't feel the least bit bad for these guys, by the way. All you have to do is run a program that people enjoy playing in. And, you know, I think Dabo Sweeney's did a good job of that. Like, you look at – it's funny because he takes a lot of criticism for being kind of, you know, a dinosaur in some ways. But they have less attrition than almost anybody. So clearly they're doing something right. Clearly they are running a program that players enjoy playing in. And – the level of success they have suggests that they still get them to work hard.
I mean, it's 25 players a year. It's really not that bad. Like that's where, and I think Dabo would probably say this too. Like, it's really not that hard to comb the entire country and find 25 guys who fit the way you want to do it.
Yeah. Yep. I think.
And now we've got the portal. So you've got twice as big a pool of players to choose from.
All right, Max, we've pilloried Herbie and Dez enough, I think. Although, again, we were fairly nice about it. I think we didn't get too mean. Ari, you know,
it's not personal with those guys. Ari did. It's not personal with those guys. I like. Do you think that that's the like? What do you think the origin is of comments like that, though? Do you think that it is just the generational thing? Do you think it's they're in production meetings and they're hearing coaches say these things? Like, where do you think that comes from?
But you want to know what my thought on this specific circumstance was? We did this show yesterday. We worked last night. They put us on a cross-country flight, even private. Still
pretty clearly being overworked here. Yeah, a little bit.
And they're going to make us talk for 3 more hours today. We got nothing left to talk about, so we got to say something. So here's what we're going to talk about this. And I do think they really believe that. I mean, it's their generation. That's how a lot of people feel. And here's the thing. There's a lot of viewers that feel that way. And I would argue that the average viewer of game day probably is more likely to feel that way, because I don't know. If you're like me, you haven't watched a ton of game day in the last few years because it got really formulaic and it's just not interesting anymore. But people who like formula and who want the same thing over and over are the type of people who fear change and want things to be the way they were in 1992. So I would imagine that most of that audience was like, hell yeah!
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and also I think that it's a reflection of this disconnect that we still have in fandom with the sport, where, I mean, the it's, how can you like not appreciate the irony of talking, having a segment talking about here's what's wrong with today's players and their decision-making process and their motivations. And then it's like, coming up next, Lincoln Riley to talk about his move to USC. You can't
not laugh. Coming up next, a bunch of softball questions to Lincoln Riley where we don't challenge him at all on leaving Oklahoma.
And like, you know, whatever, good on him for making a move. But like, let's apply the same, you know, the same lens to coach and player.
Well, and then also you're throwing to a commercial probably for the national championship game. So
for sure. I mean, we're going to have a chance to watch, Jameson Williams and Darian Kendrick and the best transfers in the country play for a national championship. Like, you know, it's just, we're just going to keep, you know,
that's how they should sell it, Max. Here are the transfers who will be playing for the national title. I love it. Let's move our room temperature takes over to the playoff itself. The semifinals were boring as hell. Let's be perfectly honest. There's no question they were boring. And
it was the second game was helpful from the New Year's Eve party standpoint.
Absolutely.
Like to have it on in the background and go back to socializing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you could turn to Miley and Pete Davidson and watch Miley's shirt fall off and while she tried to sing. She was trying to sing Party in the USA.
Who could have seen that coming?
I know. It is.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife's like, is she wearing floss? So
I didn't watch much of that, but we're new parents here, Andy. We got an 11-month-old, so we did not make it to midnight.
Don't blame you. You get your sleep when you can get it. We made it, and the kids actually made it to midnight, and boy, they were grouchy the next morning.
Dude, a couple weeks without daycare, the gas tank at 9 o'clock here is pretty empty.
So people use the boringness of the, I don't even know if boringness is a word, but the dullness of the semis to prop up two opposite arguments. One, that they should just go back to the BCS, which I would argue, then you just would have had a very boring Alabama-Michigan game, probably. And then two, that the playoffs should expand because of this, and this is where I fall, because you'll at least get some interesting games in round one and maybe some interesting quarters before you get to the boredom of the semis, because I do think you're still most likely going to get the boring semis unless something changes where the dynamics change and there's more than just one, two, maybe three elite teams.
I side with that, and I don't know, maybe this would change over time. I don't know that it would, but isn't it pretty clear that let's take Kenny Pickett, that Kenny Pickett would play in a semifinal?
Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker Jr. probably both play.
I don't think that 5 years from now guys Walker will be opting out of semifinals.
I don't think so either. And I
don't think that'd be the case.
Like, if the Peach Bowl had been a playoff game, Michigan State versus Pitt, with Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker III, that would have been a really fun game. Like, it was a fun game without them. I enjoyed the hell out of that game.
Now, I shouldn't say 5 years from now, because who the hell knows when they're actually going to start this new playoff. But I think that probably would be true for, if Ohio State believes they can still go in a national championship, and you know Ryan Day believes that on a one-game basis they can beat anybody, you've got a full squad for that.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of be the case most of the time. And I think that, look, you can – so I would like to look at what the 12 team would have been this year and if we like it or don't like it. But part of this sport is that it's not just – I know that the championship – like I should say I'm excited about this national championship game. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
Oh, I think it'll be
good
too.
I'm not unhappy that this is the outcome. But it's not like a cookie-cutter sport where there's only two good teams. Now, there's some years when there's – 7 great teams, and there's some years when there's 3 great teams.
Well, and then there's last year where
there's
going to
be
one.
Years when a
there was one last year,
right? Right, absolutely, and so I know it's going to be tough for people to adjust their standards to in terms of how they, sort of assess this sport. And a 10-2 team is a very good team and not a bad team.
I don't think it'll be tough as long as there's a fun game on their TV, like.
Right.
We look at it through the lens of us who study this for a living, and the people we interact with on Twitter who are such massive fans, so massively in the weeds that they think about this stuff all the time. The majority of people aren't thinking about it that much. They're like, oh, is there a good game on? Great, I'll watch it. Like, that's what they're worried
right.
about.
Which ones are on today? Okay, cool. I'll have the TV on. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So this is what it would have been. And we are using, I guess it doesn't matter if we're using the six highest ranked conference champs or the...
We're using the proposal from the summer from the SEC Big 12.
So this is the six highest ranked conference champs, which also happened in this case to be the Power Five and the highest ranked Group of Five champ.
And so, Cincinnati. That's right.
So number one, Alabama. Number two, Michigan. Number three, Cincinnati. Number four, Baylor, because they're a conference champ and you have to be
only
because
of the rules they came up with.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. So those four would get the bye. And you're going to argue, oh, Baylor doesn't deserve a bye. Well, you're the one that the same people who argue that you had to have conference champs and it's not fair that the SEC gets this many in. Well, this is the olive branch
this
to
is the
you.
Trade-off.
That's why Baylor gets a bye. Your number 5, number 12 game, and the winner of this game plays Baylor in some bowl game somewhere. Georgia versus Pitt. So Pitt goes to Athens to play Georgia. Which, by the way, the SEC championship game would have been really interesting because it would have been Alabama kicked Georgia into the situation where it has to play another game, but also gave it a home game. So,
yes.
Now this one's fun. The winner of this game would play Michigan. Utah at Notre Dame. That would have been a fun game.
I'm not trying to like be prisoner of the moment here on the Rose Bowl, but Utah could make the Final Four in that 12-team playoff.
The Utah team that played yesterday with so many guys out, or full strength Utah.
I'm full strength, and you know certainly if Cam Rising gets hurt, different deal, obviously. But,
right.
I think the matchups you're looking at there with Utah, like, yeah, I think
Utah could
as
be
the 11th seed in that playoff could go far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now this game, just because the way it fell, was not real interesting the first time they played. I would hope that it's better, but I don't know that the winner changes in this one. Michigan State has to go to Columbus to play Ohio State. Ohio State crushed Michigan State when they played.
If that were the deal, you would think the committee would try to steer away from that a little bit in terms of the seeding, but
if
sure,
if you're going to do a 12-team playoff like this, there are going to be situations like that. You're going to have rematches early on, and you're just going to live with them. Now, I would argue that it's...
Now, wait, hold on. So, okay, let me read, if I'm reading this right. So, the winner of Ohio State, Michigan State would go play Michigan. No, it's... I think
oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. They would play Michigan. I'm sorry.
So that's why I want to say if Utah can beat Notre Dame,
they play
then
Cincy.
They play Cincinnati. Yeah. That's why I think Utah could make that Final Four.
Wow, a good draw. Like we've never had a conversation about a good draw before, but that's a good draw. You're right.
This is a system where, and we talked about it, you remember a few years ago with Darnold and USC where they're super hot at the end of the year. Like this could be a system that potentially rewards that team that – oh, they blew a couple games early, but man, they're really, really good right now.
Well, and if Ohio State gets another crack at Michigan, do you think they win that game?
Sure.
Maybe?
You're telling me Ohio State Michigan would be a bad, Final Eight game?
Max, nobody would want to see. I mean, I can't even. Of course, everybody would want to see that. All right, 8-9 winner plays.
I think Ari wants to see it.
Winner plays Bama. Is Oklahoma State goes to Oxford to play Ole Miss? That would have been a great game too. Like Oklahoma State Notre Dame was a blast in the Fiesta Bowl. That was a fun game to watch. I feel bad if you're a Notre Dame fan. But
now, does Jim Knowles stay at Oklahoma State in that playoff?
Yes, he does.
He probably have to, right? We pushed the hirings back.
Yes, he stays at Dan Lanning is staying at Georgia through the playoff. Jim Knowles is still at Oklahoma State. Now he probably still goes to Ohio State, but he goes later.
Right. Same with Lebby. Lebby would still be at Ole Miss for this run, then go to Oklahoma later, as he did last night. And as we saw, when you put Jaylen Warren back in the mix for Oklahoma State, you know, that they can be, and Spencer Sanders doesn't throw it to the other team, like they could be a really competitive team. And you'd say that 8-9, when those teams play well, I'm not saying they're going to beat Bama, but would you really say that, you know, Ole Miss, Alabama would, you know, I The first game was disappointing.
First game was awful.
If you got Oklahoma State, Alabama, if you got
do you think Lane would
a rematch
would adjust
of Ole Miss, Bama, I don't think it'd be close, but it would be watchable.
Do you think Lane adjusts his strategy the second time around?
Yeah.
Because he was going for every fourth down. I say that he should have gone for every fourth down last night because his kicker wasn't doing him any good. So
no.
But it is.
I feel like that's not a bad 12-team playoff. And there's going to be years when you say, okay, 12 is Pitt, and Pitt won the ACC, deserves to be in it. There's going to be some years when you say teams 10, 11, 12, I don't really care to watch them in a playoff. They're going to get rolled, that kind of stuff. But there's also going to be some years when some teams get a chance that I'm not saying playing in the Rose Bowl, if you're Utah, is not significant. It's a huge, huge deal. And you saw the turnout from their fan base. But
if you ask those players, would they have rather played in the Rose Bowl or a playoff game?
No doubt. They would choose a playoff game.
Also, you can say, well, the Rose Bowl was a great game. And you'd lose that in the play. No, you don't. One of those games we just talked about will be like the Rose Bowl. And one of those games we just talked about will be like the Fiesta Bowl. And one of them will be like the Peach Bowl. And so the chances, like, at the moment.
And if we had our way and the championship was at the Rose Bowl every year, then we still get that, too.
Right, make Pasadena football's Omaha. And I know they want to have the parade on January 1st.
Good with me.
Get over it.
Who's ever said no to multiple parades?
Exactly. Have another parade. We'll send all the LSU fans to stage a parade. We'll send all the crews from New Orleans, and they'll stage a parade. If you don't want to stage another parade, if you could do your parade on the 1st, and we'll send some folks to do a parade on the 12th or 13th, whenever that game is. But yeah, I'd be fine with that. And
if parade planning is the biggest flaw of the model, then I think they did a pretty good job. But yeah, That's also kind of been our lukewarm take since the summer, is like, these four people actually put together a pretty good plan.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. This playoff, as currently constituted, you have a chance, because two games have been played and they were both boring. So you have a chance at one, at most, interesting game. If any of those games we just talked about, any two of those games we just talked about were more interesting than the one playoff game that might be interesting, then it's a better system. Like, I don't know how else to explain this to people. This is sports. It's an entertainment product. If you are entertained by the thing on your television, it is a successful product.
Yes. And at the end of the day, what we all know, based on history, is this is still going to crown the national champion at the end of it. The best teams are going to make it to the end of it. And because of the way things are tilted in recruiting, the most talented teams will be playing in the national championship still.
Yep, that's exactly right. So we will see what happens. But Max, I feel like we've been entirely reasonable today. I don't think we've been too mean to anyone. Maybe a little bit to Kirk.
No, I don't think so.
But I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Here's like my crazy one. But I don't really even care to. I think in my heart, I don't know if in my head, but in my heart, I think I might be coming around to the preseason bowl schedule idea.
You're a psycho. An absolute.
Yeah.
No,
okay, I don't wish to defend it. I'm just throwing it out.
I have thought about this multiple ways, because it is such a part of my holiday season, and I feel like with more people working from home now, it became an even bigger part of everybody's holiday season. Like, just having these random games on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like, I love them where they are, but
I agree. I enjoy it. I'm not saying it's bad. Yeah,
I would love them in August too. I'm okay with that. Like, I would love them if you played them in August. I'm not sure that the average person can get away with watching them in August the way they can the week after Christmas, because there's so many people who are either off work or they take off work because their kids are on vacation, and then maybe they're going somewhere, or maybe they're not, maybe they're just staying home. But I think you have a better, more captive audience there at the end of the season. So I would, the more I think about it, the more I'd be fine with it either way, but I'm playing the old guy here who fears change.
But you just defeated me with sound, calm logic and not a bunch of shouting. Good job. That's the purpose of this podcast.
That's right. And then we bring Ari on and I yell at him.
And when you haven't eaten for 23 hours, then, you know, the yelling is amplified quite a bit.
It's incoherent yelling about fries.
Hey, it's a new year, baby. I'm trying to live right. So my fasting has begun. So I just got through 16, almost 17 hour. And, you know, I'm trying to get these Andy Staples results over here.
I will next time I see you, there's a chance we might see each other in person in a week or so. If that happens, I will download the calorie counting app onto your phone, and then it's on like Donkey Kong. Then you're going to be getting texts from me.
While we're at lunch eating side salads and drinking water. Yeah,
there will be side salads. Absolutely. Max Olson, thank you so much, and hopefully I will see you soon.
All right, man. Thank you.